So I want to talk about mystical experiences because we don't really talk about them that often in the United Church. And if we don't talk about them here, where are we going to talk about them? And sometimes these are called religious experiences, experiences of the divine, and they're really hard to define. And so I'm just going to tell you about mine, the one I had. And it was in, I would have been in third year of university. It would have been after exam time. I was in an apartment with a couple friends, and they had gone home for Christmas. And I was watching, I don't even remember what I was watching. Oh, I do remember what I was watching. I do. It was Prince of Egypt, funny enough, the cartoon. I don't know why I was watching. Anyway, that's exactly what it was. During it, I remember my back arched, and I was just overwhelmed with emotion, and tears started coming down my face, and I was just filled with a tremendous sense of love and peace, and all. It's very cliche. I mean, it really is very cliched, to be honest with you. What I experienced there was really cliche, love and peace and all that good stuff. And I don't talk about it often because I still struggle to understand the magnitude of it. And when I say that, I mean, did it have tremendous magnitude or none at all? You know, that rational part of my brain still comes to the fore. Was it something from beyond, or was it simply a specific release of chemicals in my brain, a firing of a few specific synapses in a proper sequence? But then I ask myself, well, if it was that release of chemicals, if it was the firing of synapses, well, why were they released? What made them fire? What was going on there? And so I find it hard not to sit somewhere between embracing the experience and dismissing it. And it really depends on the day and where I'm at as to which side I lean towards in that. I don't know what it was, I don't know what I experienced, but for a moment, just for a moment, and it only would have lasted a minute, in the midst of it, I knew, I experienced the torn curtain between heaven and earth. The culminating epiphany of the Transfiguration that we just read about is the epiphany of the union between heaven and earth. The uncovering that the divide between the two is really something that we've created. But one that doesn't exist. That divide is we've created a transcendent heaven far, far away and a mundane earth right here. And nary the two shall mix. But in this epiphany of the Transfiguration, what is profane becomes holy. This, for me, is where the Jesus of history becomes the mythological Christ figure beyond history. And it's important to distinguish between the two, I think. Jesus becomes the figure Paul speaks about in Colossians when he writes, "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together." In this Transfiguration, we have a story about what is called the cosmic man. It's a Jungian archetype. It's a meta-narrative straight out of Joseph Campbell. It's a story shared in many different traditions, many different cultures. It's about the being in whom we see the fullness of creation, the being in whom we come to recognize the union of the eternal and the temporal, between the infinite and the bound. And in Christian language, we use Christ. That's the word we use. In Jesus, we catch a glimpse of something more eternal than just our everyday lives. And what we catch, the lesson that is taught over and over again, and again, not just in our tradition, but in many traditions, is that heaven and earth are one. It's a story that runs throughout human experience. They are inseparable. Christ for me is the word I use to describe the incarnate nature of God or of the absolute reality or the supreme being or whatever you want to call it. I happen to use the word Christ for that idea that it's incarnate in the world. I really like this passage for a number of reasons, but a couple of things jump out for me. One is that it includes Elijah and Moses, because their presence affirms that this isn't just some sort of one-off. And we'll often hear that theology. Oh, the world was so messed up that God needed to come up with some sort of scheme to fix it all. Hey, I know, I'll just make Jesus and kill him. That'll work. But including Moses and Elijah in this story, we see that it's not just a one-off. It's an integral part of creation that's been tapped into since the beginning of history. You know, it's been tapped into in the law. It's been tapped into in the prophets, as represented by Moses and Elijah. With them present, we are reminded that the union between heaven and earth is not bound to a single moment. Both of those figures had their own encounters with God. Both of them entered spaces or moments where they saw that the boundary between heaven and earth had dissolved. Moses saw it on Sinai. Elijah saw it on Horeb. The Christ event, the incarnation, wasn't some half-baked scheme to fix everything. It was a part of creation from its inception. And so we, in our modern pluralistic society, are invited to step out even further, to recognize in those other faiths, in their own way, perhaps using different language or story, but they still offer up that holy mystery of incarnation, the holy mystery of how sacred even the most mundane aspects of creation are, how even in the most decrepit, the most broken, the most sinful, we can come to know something marvelous and holy. Rob Bell, in his excellent series, Jesus H. Christ, that he released on his Robcast podcast, it's really quite a good series, said it well. He said, quote, "Of course, all kinds of people from all kinds of backgrounds and nations and religions and perspectives and worldviews have witnessed to the Christ. And obviously, some people would name it the Christ, and some people would have other names for it. If something is baked into the very nature of creation, people would have been pointing to it and naming it and trying to line their lives up with it." The Transfiguration is the mythic Christian expression of a universal understanding that creation is inseparable from God, that incarnation is a thing, that the world is holy. That holiness is not just something far off and transcendent, but radically imminent, present, tangible, and accessible. That it can be made known to us by whatever name our tradition invites us to know it through. And the other part of this story that I really love is the disciples. I love them because in the midst of this mythic expression, they embody something so fundamentally basic. They add something so fundamentally human to this mythic story about the union of heaven and earth. They keep it very real. Peter says to Jesus, "It's good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He wants to stay there. He wants to stay in that moment, and of course he wants to stay there. We all want to stay there. We all want to stay in those numinous moments where we understand things, where we grasp something, where everything is known, where the vision of heaven and earth become as apparent as our own hands. Yeah, I want to stay there. We want to stay in those moments where life becomes clear. We want to stay in those moments where we understand what everything is about, those moments where the sacred part within all of us, that part of ourselves made in God's image, that Christ self, that incarnate presence of something holy, speaks through the clouds and reveals something to us. It could be a mystical experience, the kind we read about or perhaps have experienced, where for a brief moment you know that God is real, that God is close. Of course we'd want to stay in that. But union with the divine can be so much more than a mystical or religious experience, as they're often described, or as I described earlier. You know, when we meet someone who's just perfect, and we know it, perhaps a partner for many years even, and we look at them, and just for a brief moment, it's like, yeah, that's right, you're the one. When we find a vocation, a job, something that we do, and it may not always feel like that. Lord knows in ministry, there are probably more times when I'm like, really? Ministry? No, there's not probably. There definitely are more times when I'm like, really? Ministry? But every now and then you get a moment where it just feels, okay, yeah, this is where I am, okay. Where our life comes together in a job and we sense that it's where we're supposed to be. I remember in second year of theological school, the day that it started, I was walking and I just started to run. And I was like, yeah, I really want to be here. And it was so weird. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm really excited to be here. And this is where I want to be. And I'm glad I'm here. And this is good and right for me to be here right now. Who knows after that? Who knows whether that feeling stays? In fact, it doesn't stay. It doesn't. But I was able to hold on to that one moment where I really felt it. Yeah, this is where I want to be. And of course, things change. God is not static, you know, and one moment many, many years ago does not for the rest of our lives define. But it is a guidepost, something to latch on to. In that time, I was in the right place and I just knew it for that brief moment as I was running on the sidewalk. When we make a decision that for an instant just feels right, when our true self cries out from within with a vocal, yes, this is who you truly are. We may not get those moments a lot in life, but they're that aspect of God woven into all of us that is speaking. It's a moment where we see through any barrier between heaven and earth. We don't see through it, I shouldn't say that. Where we realize there is no barrier between heaven and earth because heaven is crying out from within our very earthly selves. It could also not be crying out with a yes, but with an anguished no. When we encounter injustice in the world, when we know in our very hearts that something is wrong and we get a flash of it or just a general sense of dis-ease where something within says, this is not right. When we look around and see violence and poverty and addiction and the degradation of the natural world, whatever it is, whatever injustice goes on out of a failure to recognize the imminent holiness or the incarnation of sacredness, that cry within ourselves, again, that is the union of heaven and earth. Those are sacred moments where the veil separating heaven and earth is torn asunder, if only for a moment. But we can't stay. We can't stay bathed in the assuredness of our convictions or in the sense of God's presence or in an absolute self-confidence which lasts for a flash. Or at least very few of us are able to. I'm not. I wish I could. But I'm not able to. When we otherwise live lives of doubt, of questioning and wondering, am I doing the right thing? Is this right? We spend our lives leaping from numinous moment to numinous moment, constantly asking, is this right for me? Should I be working this job? Is he or she the right person for me? Is what's going on right or wrong? In the midst of all of that, we sometimes catch fleeting glimpses of truth. We sometimes hold deep knowledge for a single heartbeat.
finding such sustenance in those moments that we can go for years, possibly for the rest of our lives, with the assuredness that arises from that knowing. It's as though our doubts are the deserts we wander through, and we are sustained by each oasis we happen to come by. They're so life-giving. And they are so rare. Thanks be to God. Amen.